National Catholic Register. This is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
Pope Francis released his post-synodal letter on the Amazon this week amidst concerns that built up for the last year that a revolution on the nature of the priesthood might have been in the works. What did Pope Francis actually write? On Register Radio, we take a look at the new apostolic exhortation and what it means for the Amazon and the Universal Church. With Register correspondent Edward Penton and Register contributor Father Raymond D'Souza, I'm Jeanette DeMello, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. I'm joined by my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. Hi, Matthew.
Hello, good to be with you.
It's been a very busy week, of course.
Another one.
Of course, this was anticipated, though, this document. We've been talking about it, and there were kind of squabbles back and forth of what might be in it, even some claiming they had seen drafts, and others claiming they had seen drafts, and they were seeing different things. So we do have a document, though, and it's a Spanish title, Querida Amazonia, Beloved Amazonia. That's the title of Pope Francis's Apostolic Exhortation, which is a document that reflects the Pope's teaching drawn from a synod of bishops. And, of course, this synod of bishops was the from the Pan-Amazon region. They met last October to discuss the topic of evangelization in that very broad Amazon region. Many people worried that this document would put an end to priestly celibacy or initiate an Amazon rite or even open the door to ordaining women deacons. This was talked about not only because it was discussed before the synod, but it was actually discussed during the synod and was a part of the synod final document. So what the Pope issued instead was quite surprising. It was a love letter to the people of the Amazon and a list of dreams that he has for this region. And of course, here to talk to us about that is our Rome correspondent, Edward Penton. Welcome, Edward.
Hi, good to be with you again.
So, Edward, as I mentioned in my intro there, there was some surprise over what was in the document. What has the response been to this exhortation?
Well, as always with these documents, I mean, it depends who you talk to, but the ones I think who were very apprehensive about it, especially about the issues you mentioned earlier, I think are very happy with it. I think there's a sense of relief that those issues were not covered in the document, and I think there was such a build-up about it and such a sense that there was a big push, of course, by the German bishops who had funded much of the synod, at least the preparations of the synod, because they wanted to get those issues put through, many felt it was going to be a done deal. So when these issues weren't actually mentioned and the issue of women deacons seemed to be quite firmly rejected, then there was a lot of, quite a lot of relief.
Well, Edward, this is not a programmatic type of an exhortation. He's not responding sort of point by point to the proposals of the bishops. This seems a much more transcendent document. Is that how you would describe it?
Yes, it's a good way of putting it, Matthew. It's not actually, he doesn't quote the final document at all. He doesn't quote anything from what the Synod of Bishops had concluded at the synod in October, so it's very much his own work and putting together his own reflections. So it's quite interesting in that regard. And although the issue of the final document can be seen as problematic because he does mention it at the beginning and gives it quite a high prominence and importance, at the same time, as I say, he doesn't quote it, and he does talk about very much the concerns of the Amazon, the concerns that they're facing, and especially the injustice, the environmental threats, but also what the church can do and how the church can evangelize better to the region. So it's very much a comprehensive document and one, as I say, which I think many people seem to be quite happy with.
So he seems to use this sort of a narrative device of dreams. What is he talking about there?
Yes, well, they're basically his four visions, if you like, for the Amazon. So he talks about the ecological aspects. He called an ecological dream, which discusses, obviously, the protection of the environment and the great importance the Amazon has to ecology and to the to the world's climate and environment. And then he goes on to talk about the social, a social dream, a social vision, which is really about dealing with the challenges that the local indigenous people face, especially from exploitation and what he calls the enormous sort of economic interference and industries that have taken over and very much, as he says, exploited the local people and driven them to the cities and forced migration. And then he talks about the cultural elements. This, I think, some people think is perhaps one of the weakest areas, because he does, although he speaks very positively about the indigenous culture, there's no real critique of it. It's very much almost like a sort of pastiche of the great things about the indigenous culture and what we can learn from them, but there's not a lot about how sort of the pagan elements of that culture can be evangelized and become obviously Christian. But at the same time, it's a very comprehensive or quite a comprehensive assessment, I think people feel, of the cultural elements there. And then lastly, there's the ecclesial future, which he talks about, an ecclesial dream, and that's really about how the church can better evangelize to the region. And that's where he discusses the issue of bringing the Eucharist to remote areas. And as I say, he doesn't even mention the issue of married priests or priestly celibacy. And he really puts the emphasis on laity, and he says that the lay people really need to step up and help in that regard, and that there should be priests also coming from outside the Amazon to help, if there aren't the vocations there, to help bring the Eucharist and the sacraments to remote areas. So it's a very, as I say, it's a very comprehensive sort of account of the region.
Right, very thorough. You know, I was struck by the section on the Eucharist, Edward. It was it definitely placed the Eucharist as the center of evangelization, which was so unexpected after all the discussion and really, all the discussion about pagan worship of this of the Pachamama and all of that. You know, that the synod itself had swirling controversies. The focus on the Eucharist in this document was very welcomed. I mean, it was a relief, a great relief. I enjoyed that part. I felt like this document revisited some of the themes that Pope Francis put forth very early in his pontificate, and themes of the Church not just being an NGO. That too was very welcomed. Because that is, we've seen more of that recently. Like, the Church is just an NGO, the relationship with the UN and whatnot, you know. So this, there were a few things that I welcomed when I saw this. Of course, it did not address the women deacons directly, but it does really say, you know, women have a different place in the Church aside from ordination, and it really lifts up women, as the Pope has been doing in the last few years. It does not talk about the very probati. This is the married men ordained to the priesthood. He really kind of sidesteps that. But people have said it, he has left the door open. How? Where do you see, or where do the people you've been talking to see that he's left the door open?
Well, I think, as I said earlier, there's the issue of the final document, which was very much discussed at the press conference, the press launch of the document, because there's a great emphasis on that. And, of course, the issue was proposed and was accepted by the two-thirds of Synod Fathers to ordain married deacons in the region as a way to help bring the sacraments to remote areas. And that, because there is that emphasis on the final document, some are saying, well, you know, the issue is still open, it's still being discussed. The final document, even though it's not part of the papal magisterium, Cardinal Czerny, who's one of the special secretaries of the synod, said that it has a certain moral authority, and we have to be obedient in following what the Holy Father wishes from it. So there's that sort of question. And Cardinal Czerny's also said at the press conference that these issues do remain open. And even though the Pope clearly closed down the issue of women deacons and didn't really didn't endorse the whole Viriyapu Bharati issue, then at the same time, Cardinal Czerny said, well, the issue can still be discussed because the synod is a journey and that this is a long process and that these issues can still be discussed. So this is something quite new. Oh, this is something very new, really. I mean, you never got this under the previous pontificates that I remember, where, you know, even though a pope has clearly come down on a certain issue, then other people within the leadership of the church will say, well, these issues are still open. That is really something quite new. And it's, as some say, it's a sort of Hegelian sort of dialectic, which is really basically sort of searching. It's supposed to be on a search for truth rather than actually having the revealed truth. And that is also very new.
Yeah, well, Hegel isn't new, but it just revisits, I guess, at time and time again. So it's an interesting moment, but at the same time, I'm very grateful that the document has turned out as it has. I hope that clarity continues to come, and instead of what we've seen in the past, which is a sort of allowing of the contrary of what the Pope is saying here happen. So let's watch and see. We always appreciate your coverage, and you're always right on top of it, and we're very grateful for that, Edward.
Sure. Thanks. Good to be with you again.
When we come back, Matthew and I talk to Father Raymond D'Souza about the papal document and a pattern that comes out of these documents that we've seen with Pope Francis. This is Register Radio on EWTN. More when we return.
Don't miss a moment of 2020. Try 6 issues of EWTN's National Catholic Register today for free. Stay connected and follow the latest from Washington, D.C., the 2020 elections, along with events from the Vatican and the world. Only the National Catholic Register brings you in-depth news and analysis from a Catholic perspective. Award-winning journalism that goes beyond what you'll find from any secular news service. Try the Register for free today and get it delivered to your home, office, or parish. To get 6 free issues, order online at ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. That's ncregister.com/radio or call 800-421-3230 and mention code radio. Don't miss a minute of 2020. Call or click today. The National Catholic Register. Read faithfully.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Jeanette DeMello, Editor-in-Chief of the National Catholic Register, with my co-host, Matthew Bunsen. We're talking about Querida Amazonia. This is the apostolic exhortation that Pope Francis released this week on the Amazon Synod. And joining us is Father Raymond D'Souza, a columnist for the Register, and he has a new piece he's got 2 pieces this week on the exhortation. One is called Querida Amazonia, on the question of married priest, a papal pattern returns. So, Father Raymond, welcome back to Register Radio.
Good morning, Jeanette. Good morning, Matthew.
So this is a very curious title. You talk about a papal pattern, and that is what caught my attention. We just discussed what was in Querida Amazonia with Edward Penton. And so,
let's stop for a second.
Father, do you need me to go into another room?
No. I just need Father just to say hello, because it's not the morning. The first airing of this is at 7 o'clock at night. So.
Oh, sorry.
No,
okay,
no problem.
Did I say good morning?
No, Father did.
Well, okay.
That's okay. I just don't want it to be that one. That's okay.
I'm kind of a sunrise guy. The sun's always rising.
It's fine.
We would have been better
like
to do this
empire.
In the morning, early morning.
That's fine. Okay. We're going to go ahead and just welcome Father.
Morning again.
Again
in America, Jeff.
Welcome back to Register Radio. Father.
Are you talking to me now?
Yes. Okay. Welcome back to Register Radio, Father Raymond.
Hello, Jeanette. Hello, Matthew. Good to be with you.
So, Father Raymond, what is this papal pattern that you speak about in the title of your first column this week?
Well,
coming out of the Amazon Synod, there was this pressing question. It dominated the lead-up, and certainly after the Synod, the question was, would the Holy Father permit the ordination as priests of married deacons? So an exception for the Amazon, given the shortage of priests and the vastness of the territory. That was a pressing question. It's been banging on for about 2 years now, that question.
Right.
And so the Pope responded with his apostolic exhortation, and he doesn't address the question. He doesn't even mention married priests or celibacy. He talks about the need for the Eucharist, but that obviously is taken for granted. But he doesn't address the question, which led some people to be very disappointed because they were hoping that he would make an exception and authorize the ordination of married priests in the Amazon. So there's a lot of disappointment yesterday when it came out. What the pattern that I'm pointing out is that actually, if we go back a couple of years to Amoris Laetitia, that was the Synod on the Family, there was another highly contested question. Would those who were divorced and civilly remarried, but in the eyes of the Church married to someone else, could they receive Holy Communion contrary to the sacramental discipline of the Church? And the Pope didn't really address that in Amoris Laetitia. There was one ambiguous footnote, but it wasn't resolved in a clear way, yes or no. But what happened in the year or so after Amoris Laetitia is that various bishops interpreted it in different ways, contradictory ways. And then finally you had sort of indications from Rome. Some things were published in L'Osservatore Romano. Some people got a letter from the Pope saying it was okay. And so you've got now a situation where in some parts of the world it's authorized. Other parts of the world it's considered sinful. But there was a kind of de facto yes given in that pattern. But it wasn't clear. I mentioned another example with the capital punishment. The Pope last summer changed the catechism and said that capital punishment was now inadmissible. It's a totally new theological term used because it doesn't have its own, it doesn't have a tradition of meaning. It has its own unique meaning that is yet to be determined. So we have questions resolved with ambiguous answers that are then clarified afterwards in different localities, and that's really where we are. The document does not give approval. That's absolutely clear, which is why so many people yesterday were disappointed, saying that they wanted Pope Francis to do this. He didn't do it. But he didn't say no either. He just didn't really address the question head on. He gave hints in both directions. And so what I suggested is this is a pattern we've seen before, and most likely over the next year or 2 years, we will have initiatives in certain localities that will then end up clarifying this in practice. That's the pattern I was speaking about.
Sure. And of course, we've seen already with the German bishops, they were one of those groups that expressed disappointment in the final document. But Cardinal Marx basically said, who heads the German Bishops' Conference, at least at this point, he's on his way out, but Cardinal Marx said, you know, that the question's not closed. And there were others at the press conference this week for the release of the document who also seem to have contradictory, explanations or answers about whether those questions were closed by this document. We got criticized. In fact, you specifically got criticized for, you know, for bringing up this pattern and maybe, you know, gloating when it, you know, some people say, hey, you know, we were victorious. The Pope didn't confirm, a married priest. So you should be happy, Father Raymond. How do you respond to, those critics?
I certainly didn't do any gloating. I just pointed out. Like all the other journalists who commented yesterday, we have advanced copies that we're allowed to read and prepare. So that's why I prepared what I did. And I based my analysis strictly on the document, saying that this is a pattern we've seen before. A very clear question is there. Can we do this, yes or no? And the Pope didn't answer it. Not yes, not no. Gave indications in different directions. So that's what I wrote. The press conference took place after my analysis and many others were published. The press conference exactly confirmed what I had said earlier in the morning, I guess a few hours ahead of time when you take into account the time difference. Exactly what I said is that you had two cardinals sitting side by side at the press conference, answering very clear questions from the journalists in at least opposite directions. One, Cardinal Baldessari saying, well, the document of the Synod is not part of the Pope's magisterium, so, you know, that's not to be looked at for as a source of proposals. And Cardinal Czerny, beside him, saying everything in the final document of the Synod is still on the table. So they're not 100% contradictory, but they're certainly going in opposite directions. So I think what I said in the morning before the press conference, or based on the text, was confirmed afterwards. And if you look at the subsequent commentaries and statements throughout the day, you have people like the German bishop saying, well, we're very disappointed that it wasn't done here, but the debate continues. It's not resolved. Cardinal Czerny himself referred to that there's going to be an ongoing, a long journey ahead, that everything is to be considered. So what I said, which was that you have a pattern of a question not being answered clearly, that then gives rise to subsequent interpretations, some of which are contradictory, and that will be resolved de facto in the future, is, I think, holds up pretty well, because that's almost exactly to a T what happened yesterday.
Yeah, Father, Pope Francis's vision for the Amazon is enshrined in this document. And last year we had a lot of discussions about his work and the 2007 document from Aparecida, from the Latin American Bishops' Conference, and the juxtaposition that it inevitably created with the work of the Synod. Is Aparecida operative here? And if so, in what way? And what do we learn from Francis's vision from this exhortation?
Well, I would characterize that this exhortation after the Synod is a rescue mission for Aparecida. Aparecida was a document that was drafted by Cardinal Bergoglio, now Pope Francis, in 2007 when he was deputed by the Latin American bishops to head up that drafting, and it called for the Great Continental Mission. My argument, which you and I discussed back when we were covering the Synod in October, was that the Synod had given up on that, really, that the idea of a Great Continental Mission was dead, and so the Amazon had to be rescued or looked after by different measures, but there was not going to be any great missionary activity into the Amazon, even from the local country. So I said, if the preparatory document for the Synod was going to hold sway, it really meant the end of Aparecida. And I think, without having any inside sources close to the Holy Father, I think he must have been disappointed to sit through that Synod and realize that the vision of Aparecida was dead. It just wasn't there. In his exhortation, he tries to revive that. And I think the most interesting line in the whole of the document that the Pope released yesterday is actually, oddly enough, a footnote, 132, if I remember correctly, where the Pope observes, somewhat acidly, that actually there are more Amazonian priests serving in the United States and Europe than are actually in their own Amazonian dioceses, which means that the mission to the Amazon isn't really of much interest even to those who live there. It's a shocking statement. I didn't actually know that fact. I knew that other places in Latin America were not successful in sending missionaries to the Amazon. I didn't know that there were more Amazonians serving from the Amazon, priests serving outside than there. That's quite
really
a devastating
amazing
indictment about the health of the church in that part of the world. And it's not, I mean, it's a very harsh thing to say. I think that's probably why the Pope put it in a footnote. But he calls for bishops in Latin America to send missionaries, to have a zeal for evangelization in the Amazon, which is exactly what they called for the whole of the continent, not Amazon particularly, specifically, 13 years ago. So Aparecida was dealt a lethal, mortal wound by the preparatory document of the Synod. The Synod itself put Aparecida at death's doorstep in the intensive care unit, and this is a kind of emergency trauma intervention to hopefully that Aparecida might stagger out, not healthy, but still living, after the Pope's intervention. But it's not Aparecida, the vision of Aparecida may not be dead after this intervention by the Pope, but it's very weak.
You know, all around I saw in this document, I said this in the first part of the show with Edward Penton, in this document I saw Pope Francis, a lot of themes from his earliest days in the pontificate, really. I mean, so I can see that he was trying to revive some of the themes that have always been close to his heart. Aparecida is one of those themes. The church just not being just an NGO, focus on the Eucharist, the focus on Mary. I mean, those things were a part of this document. But unfortunately, as you said, we've seen how even these things that are close to the Holy Father's heart end up being sort of unraveled after he is spoken on the topic, because he's not one to just close doors. So, Father Raymond, we don't have much time, but what do you think is next? What should we be watching for?
Well, I think that to go back to the first set of things we talked about, I think probably in the next year, maybe two, a bishop in the Amazon will apply, ask Rome for permission to ordain as a priest a Mary deacon, and appeal to the authority of the final document, which at the press conference was said to have moral authority but not magisterial authority. That's another novel distinction we're not used to. And a bishop will ask for permission, and then we'll see what Rome says, because then it'll actually clarify if something has changed or not. I think that'll happen. It might not happen right away, because there are actually very few married permanent deacons in the Amazon to begin with. So it might be hard to find a plausible case, but I think that will happen. And then we'll see what is clarified, if permission is given or not.
Right.
On the broader question of whether the vision of Aparecida will live, that can't be, the Pope, no matter how committed he is to it, he cannot force the bishops of Latin America to embrace that vision. And at least insofar as the Amazon region, they've abandoned the vision, he's not permitting it to be buried. But I can't imagine that that his call for a new zeal for missionary activity in the Amazon is going to be heeded, because that same call went out 13 years ago and was ignored then.
Well, certainly the Amazon region and all those who are evangelizing there need our prayers. Thank you, Father Raymond de Souza, for your time with us this morning and for writing at ncregister.com. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us here on Register Radio on EWTN. For Matthew Bunsen and our producer, Jeff Burson, I'm Jeanette DeMello. Until next week, God bless you.